What's up, everyone? This is Lito, and you're listening to Crypto Testers, a podcast keeping you informed about all the coolest projects in the crypto space. In this episode, I talk to Stefan, the founder of Avado Cloud. Avado Cloud produces blockchain computers, which users can run at home and which are extremely easy to set up. Using an Avado device, even non-technical people like myself can run nodes in decentralized networks and earn crypto tokens for it. In the episode, we talk about how he got the idea for Avado and how he built the first prototypes, about the importance and benefits of running your own node and participating in crypto networks as an active participant. We also talk about the variety of networks that Avado supports and how these networks work, as well as the long-term vision of the project. I hope you liked the episode and learned some new things. Before we jump into the show, I want to thank my sponsor Bitwala. Bitwala is Germany's crypto flagship company. They offer users a full-fledged bank account with integrated crypto wallets and crypto trading features. With Bitwala, you can do your traditional finance and your crypto finance all in one app. Within minutes, you can convert your crypto into euros and then spend it with your Bitwala debit card, or invest your Bitcoin in the app and earn interest on it. If that's not enough, you can get 20 euros if you sign up using our special Crypto Testers link, which I posted in the show notes. Hey, Stefan.
Hey, nice to meet you.
Welcome on the Crypto Testers podcast.
Very nice. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, in crypto, we hardly ever talk about hardware. Sometimes we talk about hardware wallets. And I actually had an episode not so long ago with Bitbox, which, by the way, is also Swiss-based. So it seems like Swiss like to manufacture high-quality products. But that's pretty much about it. So I'm happy to have you on this podcast today to discuss another product category or vertical in the hardware space that I'm very bullish about. And that's home blockchain computers, I would call them, or home nodes. Because crypto networks are almost always networks that require active participants to run some dedicated software to participate in these networks. And this process can be quite hard for non-technical people. And your company essentially delivers a box that makes this process of running these nodes incredibly easy, and even easy enough for people like me that are incredibly non-technical to manage it. And so I wanted to talk to you and learn a bit about the history of Avado. And yeah, let's just start with that, a bit about yourself and how you guys started Avado.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for the introduction. So yeah, maybe first about the, let's say, the product or the proposition. So what we are trying to bring to the market is basically a plug-and-play blockchain computer. So we, as you said, we want to make it possible for like any kind of blockchain enthusiast to be able to really participate in these decentralized protocols. Now, maybe about the history of Avado. So it started, the journey for me started back in 2015 when Ethereum launched, like when the mainnet first launched. We were building and exploring on Ethereum, like with all that new concepts and paradigms of smart contracts. And in 2016, I met Bernd Lapp, which is my co-founder of Avado, and we're active in a joint project called Swarm City. And one of the things that went on in Swarm City was that we needed to aggregate and accumulate a lot of data, like real-time data from people that physically moved around throughout the world. But because it had the potential, they had so much data and so much filtering to be done, it was not feasible to just create a dApp that could like filter like a worldwide pool of data. Mm-hmm. So we already figured out back then that we needed some way that people could participate in the network, because obviously we didn't want to start and run some servers in at AWS to do all the aggregation, because then you just lose the whole aspect of decentralization. So there, sort of the concept started to grow to say we need to have some solution where we can have everybody who wants to participate in our network. And since we are using an own token to sort of like incentivize the whole network, it would be very easy for us to pay out somebody using our token as well. So like an incentive model would be almost trivial to implement. Now, back in those days, it never came to fruition, that idea. But then later on, and that was in the end of 2018, we decided really to act upon that. So we started building our hardware solution, and so the software solution as well. And at December 2018, so by Christmas time, we shipped out our first batch of VADA computers. So yeah, and then with that proposition, we went on in 2019 and 2020. We started adding more and more of these dApps. And I think up to this point, we have about 25 different projects that you can like simply install in one click on the Avado. And then certainly like by the end of 2020, when ETH2 staking came live, so when the Beacon Chain was launched, a little before that, there was tremendous amount of interest also in our product of people who wanted to start staking ETH2.
Mm-hmm. That's really, I think, a pivotal point for you as a company. At least my subjective perception has been that since then, interest in these home blockchain computers has risen a lot, because before that, people could maybe run an Ethereum 1 node with Avado, but there was no financial incentive to do so. Correct me if I'm wrong. But now with ETH2, users have a real super lucrative incentive to get an Avado, because by staking at home using an Avado device, they can basically cut out the middleman, such as Coinbase, which also offers Ethereum staking, but they take a big fee for it. And using an Avado node, people can cut that middleman. And so, I've seen a lot of interest for your product, at least on Twitter, since then. Would you agree to that?
Yeah, sure. Because like in the beginning when we launched, it was primarily Ethereum devs that wanted to buy our node because they wanted to have infrastructure that they can easily run at home to do all their blockchain programming. Because certainly back in those days, now with COVID, it's a little bit less, but there was a lot of traveling and going to conferences. And if you're running your blockchain on your laptop through like a Wi-Fi, like just being on the road, that's very inconvenient. So just having a box sit at home and sync that blockchain for you with remote access to it, that's like super convenient. But then it's true that it's shifted a lot to more, let's say, I would call it maybe more an opportunistic audience that says, oh, we really want to earn some money, some coins by running and participating in blockchain networks. And so you see a lot of interest from that angle now towards our product.
And so what was the first functionality that you had in the sort of V1 when you first shipped the device? Was that just an Ethereum 1 node?
Yeah, so we had like several blockchain nodes. So we had the Bitcoin node that you could run. You could run an Ethereum node, a Monero node. I think that was about it. And then later on, we added things like Kusama, Polkadot. Later on, the Avalanche network as well. That's also, by the way, one of the ways to stake on our Avado platform. So you can also participate in that blockchain protocol. And then later on, like I said, we added several dApps that could also earn you money, basically, by just participating in the protocol.
Gotcha. So for developers, the rationale is clear, right? So you're saying they basically want a copy of the blockchain to have it with them, that they can carry it around, and just whenever they do some development, some local testing, and they don't have Wi-Fi, they can't connect kind of remotely to the blockchain. They want to still be able to retrieve that data. And so they literally carried like their version of the blockchain copy with them in their bag or whatever. But what about users? Like, why does it make sense for a user to run a node? And maybe let's begin with what is a node? Because I feel like many DeFi users, even who are like really familiar with the whole DeFi ecosystem, don't even know what a node is, because it's abstracted away for them. Even if they use a wallet like MetaMask, they never really have to bother about nodes, right? So how would you explain what a node is, and why would you say it matters that people run a node at home?
Yeah, of course, there are like different angles. I mean, there are a lot of answers to that question. But I would say, like, first of all, you can help this network. Yeah, so the whole, all these blockchain networks, basically all these peer-to-peer networks, they rely on many people running nodes of that software. So that's the only way that it functions. So in that way, you can participate and make a network stronger by running a node yourself. Second part, and that has to do with the example that you gave from, with, for example, MetaMask, is about privacy. So if you run your own nodes, then you can connect your MetaMask to your own nodes. And then all the transactions and all the queries that you do on a blockchain are performed against the local node that you have. And so nobody outside of your own local network will know what kind of transactions that you yourself initiated. And certainly with regards to, for example, your location or your IP address. So if you run, if you use MetaMask out of the box, if you just install it without anything else, then basically all the queries that you do on a blockchain, all the transactions that you send to the network are done through servers, like third-party servers that are hosted by MetaMask. And so thereby you're sort of disclosing your IP address, for example, so you're losing part of that privacy. So that's like a second reason that people would want to use it. And then, of course, a third proposition, but it's totally separate from running a node, is the sort of the opportunistic approach that you say, I just want to have a box that can earn some kind of passive income for myself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's for the staking networks. But if we're talking about Ethereum One node, that would more be the doing a service to the network and also doing a service to your own privacy. Is that right?
Yeah, true. Because in general, like, people usually know or participating in blockchain networks from the mining perspective. So really participating in proof of work, mm-hmm. which, by the way, Avado is not a solution for that. It's only for proof of stake. So you have mining, but you also, all the non-mining nodes, they are validating nodes. So even just by running a copy of the node or the ledger mm-hmm. and participating in the network, you're also protecting the network by validating all these transactions, because that's exactly what your node does. It compares all the data that comes in, sees that all the cryptographic signatures are right and so forth. So it does more than just creating a copy of the network. It also provides the resilience and the anti-fragility of a network. So by just running more nodes, you're actually helping the network.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I realized this. Actually, this is kind of when my interest for nodes started. There was a time, I think back in September or October, where Infura, which is a service that MetaMask uses, which is like a remote node as a service that's in the cloud, MetaMask uses them, and then Infura was down because they had some technical difficulties. And then suddenly I couldn't connect to the blockchain anymore. I couldn't get my transactions through. And people who run a node at home, they can continue to connect to the blockchain because the node is literally next to their computer, essentially. So did you also see interest spark at that time when that whole episode happened?
Yeah, maybe in a nice anecdote for that is that so we have another sort of proposition in that community of Avado, which we call the Rio Cloud, so which stands for Run Your Own Cloud, where it's possible for different Avado users to pool the resources, so the different dApps that they run. And then we, as Avado, we host a load balancer that exposes all these machines or all these services to the world. So one of the things that we are doing with the Rio Cloud is creating a pool of Ethereum nodes. And so it's publicly accessible for everybody. And when Infura went down, so exactly at that time, like, people were desperately looking for alternatives and other endpoints that they could use, because a lot of people were, like you said, they couldn't start doing their transactions anymore. Mm-hmm. And that is when people also found our Rio endpoints and started using it. So actually, when Infura went down, a part of the solution, and we were, of course, joined by many other people that provided public access points to Ethereum then. But they were served by actual Avado users that run those systems at home. So we were part of the solution there. Yeah.
That's super cool. I didn't know that. And are users also incentivized to put their home node that they run using an Avado device? Are they also incentivized to contribute to this load balancer or to this public gateway?
Yeah, so it's right now it's sort of in an alpha phase still at Rio Cloud, and so we are not charging for access to that. We also think that the margin of running such a service might be very thin because it's already a market where a lot of players are in. But you could have like specialized services like running an archive node, for example, mm-hmm. which might be solutions that people are actually willing to pay money for. And we have all the infrastructure in place since we have, so each Avado that is being sold, people have the opportunity to mint an NFT token through their purchase. So that means that they can have like a proof on chain that they actually own an Avado box. Mm-hmm. And so it also comes with some sort of a quality guarantee since we have like uniformity in this hardware. Mm-hmm. We can also know what the capacity is of that node. So that means we can also know what kind of load we can send through a load balancer to that specific node. So we can very fine grains tune this whole load balancer if you mm-hmm. want. And then it becomes possible to provide very qualitative service and very reliable service and also start charging for that for specific use cases, like, for example, an archive node. Yeah. It's not live yet, but it's certainly on the planning.
Okay. Yeah, it's interesting that you say that this is a low-margin business because I know that there are these node-as-a-service companies like Infura or Alchemy, and these solutions are actually used by any developer that builds an application on Ethereum because they need to access the blockchain. A lot of times they send a lot of queries. So these are node as a service companies. And I think they have quite like high valuations. They get investment by VCs. And now you basically, as far as I understand, you have the opportunity to build such a service, but in a much more decentralized way because they have some servers maybe in one location or in two locations. But you have the opportunity to build a node as a service where the nodes are basically distributed throughout the whole world. Mm-hmm. Isn't that much like more resilient and bigger potentially?
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is, we can build basically an Infura without hosting all the servers that are behind it. The only thing we need to host is a load balancer. And then all these people, like, they just participate through a peer-to-peer network by providing their access. So, I mean, you have a point there, of course. So, yeah, it could be an opportunity for us on the longer term to do that. But it's half contradictory to our own mission, which is to have everybody install their node at home. And so that in the end, you don't need a service like Infura anymore because you can just connect to your own home node and do the exact same thing that you would normally use Infura for.
Mm-hmm, understand. And you said, so every Avado buyer can mint an NFT. So you have an estimation of how many people have bought an Avado?
Yeah, of course, we don't need the NFT to measure that since we are selling the boxes ourselves.
True.
But the interesting part, I think, and maybe I can talk a little bit about the community that we have, because we have a very vibrant community of Avado users. Mm-hmm. What we are using the NFT for actually is for the support. So since we are selling these boxes and like everybody who installs it, certainly we are, because we are not targeting to technical audience, people tend to have questions. Like, so normally the setup is very simple. You just unpack the box, you plug it into your router, it gets its own IP address from the router, then it exposes a Wi-Fi access point, and then you can just connect with your laptop to that Wi-Fi access point and do your setup. So normally it's technically very simple, but still if people have questions, they can come into our Telegram group. And it can be helped by other people that also have an Avado that have already experienced this and are knowledgeable about these topics. Now with the NFT token, it's possible for us to know on-chain who actually provides this kind of support. So we've set up a support system where we sort of deposit the money that we would normally use to set up our own support system. We drop it into a smart contract, and then people using the NFT can withdraw money from the smart contract if they provide service to other users. And so inside of our Telegram channel, we have bots running that sort of records how people praise mm-hmm. each other for giving support. And based on the numbers that bot gives us, we can just pay out the money to our community. and thereby creating a very scalable system of support, because like the more boxes we sell, the more people will flow into our channels and the more incentivized they will be, because there will be more support budget and so forth. So we're trying to create this positive feedback loop.
Totally.
Create sort of flywheel to create an enormous capacity of people that can give support on our devices.
And is that working well?
Yeah, it's working surprisingly well, actually. I think we started with it about 2 to 3 months ago. Yeah, and people really love it. And we also see that there's a lot of, like, if a newcomer comes to the channel, usually after 2 or 3 days, they really get, you see that they are like saying in those channels, like, oh, it's amazing how fast I get support. And so they just come in into that channel. They say, oh, I have a problem here or there, maybe getting their Avado set up. And it's like immediately they start a conversation with 1 or 2 or 3 people that really want to help them, because, and they only discover later on that these people are like financially incentivized to do so, first of all. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But it's a very convenient and pleasant experience for the end user. But then after that, they've gone through that sort of onboarding phase, then they also become knowledgeable about Avado. They also discover the possibility that they can also earn something by providing the same kind of support to another newcomer. So they stick around in our community and they start, you know, they end up helping other people then. So that's sort of that positive feedback loop that we are really seeing to play out. And you know, of course, it's very nice to see, because there are like literally hundreds of people sitting there and helping each other.
Yeah. And I mean, it's much in line with the ethos of distributed networks and, you know, peer-to-peer networks, that you basically decentralized the last thing that, you know, people think you cannot decentralize, which is customer support.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's encouraging to see that this works. And tell me a bit about the kind of manufacturing process that went behind the development of the Avado node, because like if I would start to want to build like a hardware device, I would not know where to start. I don't know if you guys had any experience in that, or just like what was the process like to get the first boxes produced and delivered?
Yeah, the benefit that we have, of course, is that the hardware that we need to use is pretty straightforward. So it's really off-the-shelf hardware that we can use, because it's a regular small-size PC. It's more lightweight than a regular PC. So it, for example, consumes much less power than if you would refurbish an old desktop PC that you would have lying around, because that would maybe take like 200 watts of electricity. Mm-hmm. While if you're running an Avado, you're talking more about 20 to 30 watts of electricity. So it's a really very small footprint with regards to energy consumption. And we just, yeah, we did different experiments. We tried out different suppliers from in China that would give us like the best hardware. And then we did some benchmarks with like synchronizing these Ethereum chains, Bitcoin chains, and so forth, to see what would achieve the best results with regard to like disk speed, but also disk size now, because the first devices that we sold, they came with a 1 terabyte SSD disk. But if you look at the Ethereum chain right now, it has changed recently with the new versions of Git. But we were close to having a blockchain size close to like 800 gigabytes. So that would mean if you were already running an Ethereum node, your disk would also be almost be full. So since I think beginning of 2020, we start shipping devices with 2 terabytes of SSD disk. So there's also still evolution in that.
Yeah.
We're still looking, we're constantly scouting and looking at the market, what works better. And we're also now in the process, by the way, but that's not really, we haven't put that or announced it on our roadmap yet, that we're really building our own custom hardware. So really like having our own motherboard manufactured and also creating like a fully customized enclosure for it. So it really becomes an Avado branded product all the way.
Wow. And that would then be produced in Switzerland or Belgium, or not in China anymore?
Yeah, so we buy components in several countries. So like parts, like the motherboard and so forth, they come from China. But then we also have suppliers in the European Union to supply us with a constant flow of SSD disk, because like the requirements that we have and the volumes that we need to order. So we need to have a steady supply so we can constantly ship devices to people. So we just try to optimize for continuity.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned one thing that I have always been curious about, which is the blockchain size. So the blockchain size grows continuously because every few minutes or seconds in the case of Ethereum, a new block gets added. So data gets added and everyone wishing to run a node needs to store that additional data. And so this copy grows. And you said the people who bought in Novado like 1 year ago with the old 1 terabyte size, they are now almost like at full capacity because the blockchain size is 800 gigabytes. What would you say to Avado buyers now if they buy a 2 terabyte Avado? Like, do you think in 1 year it's also going to be like not powerful enough to run the blockchain at that time, or in 2 years? Or like how should Avado buyers think about this?
Yeah. Well, so what we are anticipating, and I think looking at the situation now, this has been a good bet up to now, is that we try to build a hardware configuration that for us makes sense, both from the point of view of that it's flexible enough, because on the one side of the spectrum, you can have solutions that are very like low on specifications. I mean, you could run, if you want, an Ethereum node on a Raspberry Pi, very cheap, but then it's at full, that hardware is at full capacity. Mm-hmm. So we're taking a different approach. We're saying, no, we're going to containerize everything. We're going to provide you with one device on which you can run different blockchains simultaneously. So for example, I have an i5 running here, which is both participating in proof of stake on Ethereum. So I'm running an ETH2 validator on it, but also an Avalanche validator at the same time on the same machine. So you need like a beefy machine that is strong enough to run a couple of blockchains with enough disk size. But on the other hand, you also don't want that box to cost too much. And like the most determining factor of the price is the SSD size, because that's by far the most expensive component in the box. So the reason why we went with 1 terabyte is that we said, okay, we have some runway. So when we started in 2018, we estimated that we would have about 3 years of runway, which seemed to be a good guess. But we also anticipated that the software would evolve. And now with the latest version of Git, for example, they have added the feature of the pruning nodes. So that means that he doesn't store the complete blockchain, but I think it's only the full data from the last year. And then like all the previous things, it's only the block header or something. I don't know exactly what is stored or what is not stored there. Mm-hmm. The very technical details. But it means that now the database can be shrunk that 800 plus gigabytes to about 300 gigabytes. So that means even if you have bought this i5 in 2018, by just the way the software evolves, you can still have like 2 or 3 additional years of runway just with the same hardware.
Yeah. These guys are amazing. The Ethereum guest developers, I feel like they're always pushing the boundaries of what's possible and how to reduce the size while still like running the full node. It's pretty impressive. So it's basically kind of betting on something similar than Moore's law, where instead of computing power doubling every year, it's guest capability to reduce the blockchain size.
They increase their engineering skills twofold each year. So
exactly.
Even though the blockchain doubles in size, and they can keep it at the same size approximately.
Yeah. We also have Ethereum 2 coming, and there's also probably going to be a lot of changes when the full Ethereum 2 is rolled out, because right now we're in phase 0, but when the old ETH1 is merged into ETH2, who knows what it will be like to run a node in 1 or 2 years. Maybe there will be so much changes by then that it will be much lighter. Did you have any opinion on that already, or is that too far into the future?
Yeah, so I think you have to look also at the life cycle of these kind of hardware devices. So if you are looking at the 2 to 3 year lifespan of these devices, I think you have a safe bet. And certainly with the incentivized dApps that we offer on Avado. Mm-hmm. And for example, if you participate in ETH2 staking or like running a relayer on Tornado Cash, for example, we also have Mysterium, which is a decentralized VPN that also pays you out in crypto tokens for providing some bandwidth to the network. Mm-hmm. So if you add all these fees together, Yeah, I mean, you just earn like a multiple of whatever the device costed over a span of 2 to 3 years. So that's sort of our span of the hardware, so that in like 3 years' time, it's time to upgrade your hardware. And like I said, we're constantly monitoring the evolution and the requirements of all the packages that we have in our dApp store with regards to what makes sense to run on a hardware site. But like, we just want it to be convenient for people that they just have to click and then install some software and participate. But also, we don't want people to start hosting a whole data center in their house. You know, it needs to be a nice balance between the comfort and also the price point, of course.
Well, I can confirm it's super easy to install. I was literally impressed. I had in my room, the package arrived and I left it closed for a while because I thought it's going to take like a whole day to get it started. So I postponed it for a couple of days. And then when I finally opened it and followed the manual, I was done after like 2 minutes. And I was like, no, there's no way this can be it. But yeah, it's quite cool how fast it goes. Quick shout out to our sponsor Stakewise.io. Stakewise is a really cool ETH2 staking provider. They take care of all the heavy lifting involved in the staking process. Basically, they offer two options to stake. Pooled staking, where you can stake any amount and you can withdraw your staked ETH at any point. Or solo staking, where you need a minimum of 32 ETH and you have your own validator node hosted by Stakewise and maintained by Stakewise, but you also have full control over the funds. So there's two options depending on your needs and preferences. I really recommend you check them out at stakewise.io. They have an incentivized testnet going on at the moment where you can get familiar with the user experience of the whole staking process using fake ETH or testnet ETH, and they will go live with their production app in the next couple of weeks.
There's a special opportunity this week that I would like to mention. Metric.exchange, a community-owned decentralized exchange aggregator, is holding a trading competition to reward early users for using the platform. $50,000 in Metric tokens will be distributed to users who make on-chain swaps or limit orders. This is a cool chance to try a new cutting-edge platform and get rewarded for it.
Let's talk a bit about Ethereum 2.0 and the whole staking. Do you want to maybe give an overview of how staking works basically and what the mechanics are?
Yeah, sure. And I can also talk about how we try to solve it in Avado to make it more convenient. So like Ethereum staking, so the concept of proof of stake, that is so the comparison with proof of work is with proof of work, you are sort of converting electricity into consensus. So you have to put a lot of money expressed in electricity. So you have to put a lot of budget put into the electricity to actually create a new block on Ethereum. And so if you sort of be fraudulent and then try to insert a wrong transaction into such a block, then it will be noticed by the rest of the network. Your block will be discarded. And so the thing you lose is all the money that you put in into electricity in mining a block. And so that's sort of the reason why you only want to mine actual valid blocks. Mm-hmm. Now, in proof of stake, they change the concept that you say instead of putting in electricity, you're going to put your own coins at stake. Yeah, so for Ethereum, as most people know, you have to put in 32 ETH and lock it into a smart contract. And then you sort of get the permission to create new blocks on the Ethereum network. And so at some regular intervals, you can propose a new block on the system and you get rewarded. So you also get like a sort of a mining fee for creating a new block. So that's the concept, that's how it works. So the biggest difference with proof of work mining is that in proof of stake mining, you don't need very beefy hardware to do it. So all these cryptographic puzzles that you need to solve with proof of work, they are not there anymore. Mm-hmm. So it's just a matter of like putting in your money, basically. But the computational process of creating a new block is pretty lightweight. So that's why it's a perfect fit for the Avado to participate in that. You also don't need a very stable internet connection. So like a regular home broadband internet connection is more than enough to do it. because they designed the protocol in such a way that you really have to be down for like weeks and weeks before you actually get punished with your stake. So you're basically not earning any rewards while you are offline, and the penalties that you get are like very low. So that's really by design in the protocol. So that's also not something that people should not worry about. And then, like I said, with Avada, we want to try to sell convenience to people. And so one of the things that we did is that normally if you go through the regular procedure of onboarding yourself as an Ethereum 2 validator, you need to go to the website of Ethereum and there download a piece of software, a piece of command line software, where you're going to create the staking keys. And so the cryptographic keys, the key pair that you need to put into your validator. Now what we've created a separate package which wraps that whole command line into a convenient web wizard. So that means if you run it on Avado and you want to onboard yourself, you never have to leave the UI of the Avado itself. So you can just type in like a desired password and so forth, and you can download like the mnemonic phrase all from the UI. And it's all running on your local machine. So it's not that it's a custodial solution or you're running and like sending your passwords outside on the network. It just stays all in your local environment. And that makes it super convenient because people are often afraid to start downloading command line software. It's very cumbersome for people. And that's why we try to just make it very convenient for people so that it's basically accessible to anybody. And a lot of people that bought into crypto here in like Ether, for example, they have now some funds sitting around, and it's a perfect opportunity to sort of activate that and really create the yields on the ETH that you're holding, because you're actually earning more ETH every day that you're running the validator.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's really the part about ETH 2.0 or proof of stake in general that I love, because mining is such an obscure kind of consensus mechanism. You don't know, or the average Joe doesn't know, you know, really what mining is, who are the miners, where is it happening, and you cannot mine at home because just the computing power that you need is required to actually have like whole server farms or mining rigs that take a whole room basically, and you need super cheap electricity. So you need to be, you know, in a country that has cheap electricity, such as like China or Iceland, but like much of the world is kind of excluded from this just by being in the wrong geography.
Yeah, true. I also think it's about the ecological aspect as well, in the sense that running it on the Avado, like I said, it's very low power. So you're looking at an electricity bill on a yearly basis of between 30 and 50 US dollars to run it. So yeah, it doesn't compare to the proof of work.
100%. And it doesn't compromise on security either. One thing that I heard a couple of times that was more before actually ETH 2.0 was launched was concerns that, you know, it was still going to be too complicated and most people would just stake with centralized exchanges and that this would introduce some centralization risk. Do you think this has materialized, this danger, or are we seeing that people are actually, you know, running their own staking nodes at home?
Yeah, the thing is, so there's these thresholds for people to start staking at home. And that's what sort of the gap that we are trying to close, that we try to onboard more and more people to really start doing it from home. Now, the interesting aspect, I think, for us, which plays into our advantage, is, of course, with the current bull market, these prices, since they are rising. Yeah, so if you go to an exchange, for example, you're looking at 5 to 10, sometimes even 15% of the staking rewards that you're leaving on the table there. Now, depending, so since the Ether price is getting at these heights, this really amounts to quite some big US dollar value, let's say. And so if you start looking at the investment thesis, so to speak, for an Avado box, the more that these prices go up, yeah, the lower the threshold is to just go and buy your own device, because with the Avado, because you're running your own hardware, 100% of the staking rewards are for yourself. You don't have to pay anything to Avado or something. We are just providing the hardware layer and the software layer on top. But other than that, you're on your own. So it's like much more profitable. So right now, so I'm, for example, I'm mining ETH2 since December, And so yeah, the price of my i7, I'm doing it on an i5, but even if I would have an i7, it would have paid back itself already, I think, 2 or 3 times by now. Wow. That's only for about 4 months into the game. So it's a no-brainer if you have the capital to even run one validator, then just run it at home.
Yeah, exactly.
It's much more profitable.
That's the downside, right? That you have to put up these 32 ETH in order to make up one staking node. But I even have a friend who, you know, he has sort of a blockchain home computer. It's not an Avado. It's just like one that he bought, you know, on Amazon or whatever. It's probably not as easy to set up. Mm-hmm. But he basically asked a couple of friends if they wanted to pool their ETH together, just because they know each other and they trust each other. And then they had 32 ETH together to put this into good use and earn yield on it, which is also kind of a solution. Not as scalable, but so I think it is still much more accessible than mining, certainly. But what do you think are the dangers of staking with centralized exchanges? I mean, it's certainly... You know, I recommend it sometimes to users who only have one ETH or something, because you're still earning some yield, and it's still a cool way for users to try these things out. But what would be the danger if, let's say, you know, 5 big centralized exchanges controlled like 600,000 of the 1 million ETH that are staked? Or I don't even know what the stats are, but let's say like 2/3 of all the ETH that is staked is controlled by centralized exchanges.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's mostly on a conceptual level, in the sense that this whole, like, all these protocols are designed to be decentralized. So like putting your stake into a staking pool at your exchange, for example, it just sort of contradicts the whole value proposition of a decentralized network. So other than that, I don't think there are too many risks involved for end users that, for example, just take 1 or 2 ETH through their exchange. Because I think a lot of things have changed over the years. I think most of these companies that bring staking services, they are pretty trustworthy and so forth. I mean, there will be outliers, of course. But I think in general, it's not the risk of you losing your funds, for example, might not be big. But I think we should not forget that, like, if you pool money together and it sort of all attracts into one pool, like on one wallet on an exchange, to do all that staking. I mean, it's just an invitation for, like, if something needs to be done, like a coin vote or something. I mean, it could go wrong. So and you can just avoid that by like distributing everything. So
right, a security risk, right? A honeypot, because if they pool all these assets and in the end it's held in one blockchain account, an address, and in some way the centralized exchange needs to control the keys, even if they have, you know, they put a lot of thought into how they secure this key, but there's still always a security risk and a big honeypot for hackers, basically.
Yeah, so you also have the, I think I read it on Twitter sometimes, that they call certain chains, they call them like data center chains or something. I don't know what the exact term was, but like they say they are decentralized, but actually all the servers that run it are like stored somewhere in a data center. And since you only have like 4 or 5 big names that have hosting services worldwide, you're basically having like 1/4 or 1/4 of, or 1/5 of your whole blockchain is just sitting at one company. And that's just a situation that you don't want. And that's where what we are trying like to fight for. We just lower the threshold for people to run that stuff at home.
Mm. Yeah, I love that mission.
And that they can do that. Yeah.
And let's talk a little bit about the dApps. Besides, you said you allow people to run like protocol nodes or blockchain nodes like ETH1, ETH2, Avalanche, Polkadot, Kusama. But you also allow them to run some dApps, some applications that run on the Ethereum blockchain. And for running this specific software, these users can earn some token in this DeFi network. So one is Tornado, which is a privacy network, right, for private payments on Ethereum. And so how does this work? Because I haven't tried this out on the Avado. Like, how does Tornado work, and like how do they incentivize users to participate in their network?
So the idea with Tornado Cash is that you put in like a fixed amount. So they have like several pools. So you have a pool of 0.1 ETH, 1 ETH, 10 ETH, and I believe even a pool of 100 ETH. And so everybody puts like the same amount in, and then using zero knowledge proofs, you can like withdraw that 1 ETH or that 10 ETH out of that pool, but without having that correlation. So it's sort of a coin anonymizer solution. Mm-hmm. Now, one difficulty is that if you want to withdraw that money, you still have to pay gas to the Ethereum network to do the withdrawal. And then you get in some sort of a chicken and egg situation, because you don't want to use your own wallets to do that withdrawal transaction, because then people will know that it was you that withdrew that thing, and sort of undoes the whole privacy aspect.
You want to break the link between your old account and that new account that has a completely fresh balance, like zero balance, but you need to withdraw the ETH in the Tornado mixer. But if there is no gas, then you have a problem basically, because you cannot withdraw it from Tornado without having some ease. So that's the chicken and egg problem, right?
Yeah, exactly. So that you describe it very, very well here. So what they do is they have a network of relayers. And so a relayer is somebody who does that transaction, that withdrawal transaction, in your name. And so because they are using this zero knowledge proofs technology, they can give that withdrawal like slip, that note, as they call it. You can sort of somehow send it to a relayer, which then does a transaction for you. And then that relayer will get a fee. So you can charge, like, for example, on the Avado, we charge 0.1% of the fee of the money that's being withdrawn, plus the gas costs. So that means if you are in a pool of, let's say, 10 ETH and you use a relayer to withdraw it, you will get something like 9.9 or 9.8 ETH in your fresh new blank wallet without requiring any gas, without having to do any transaction on the blockchain yourself. And so that is software that Tornado Cash provides, and that we have wrapped into a package. And you can run it on the Avado. But that is where that Rio Cloud comes in, because you need people that use Tornado Cash. They somehow need to find that relayer and be able to conveniently access that. So what we have done is, again, we created this load balancer, this pool, with all these Tornado Cash relayers. And I think there are about like 40 to 45 people participating in that right now in Avado. We are exposing that into one endpoint, and that endpoint has been added to the Tornado Cash user interface. So that means that if you just use the dApp on Tornado Cash, at random, he selects a different relayer for each customer that uses the service. So every now and then, our load balancer gets a transaction, and that again is distributed over all the Avado users. So every now and then, you get a transaction. But each of these transactions, and sometimes it's like a lottery, because sometimes you get a small transaction where then the same fee yields into less revenue. But if you are lucky, you get a couple of these 100 ETH transactions, it can actually be pretty profitable as well.
Wow, that's amazing. And so, but the maximum transaction is 100 ETH, right, for Tornado Cash? I think they have like thresholds. It's 1 ETH, 10 ETH, or 100 ETH. Is that right?
Yeah, I think the limit is at 100 ETH, as far as I know. Yeah,
and so
we also have some pools with DAI and USDC, I believe, as well. But I think they're comparable in size. Yeah.
And so any of the users within Avado node can basically be randomly selected and receive 0.1% of whatever the transfer amount is.
Yeah, exactly. And so the thing, and that's the nice thing about Avado, is you are running that piece of hardware anyway, so it's 24/7 on, so it doesn't take a lot of effort to just install that app, configure it, and just leave it running. So it's like you just fire it up and forget about it, and then later on you just check the balance of your Relayer account, and then you can see that that the balance goes up in there.
How lucrative is that? Do you run one yourself?
Yeah, so I, of course, since I built most of the software myself for that Rio Cloud, so I've been doing that since the beginning, so which was about mid-2020 when we started offering that package. And I don't know by heart, but I think like expressed in US dollars and certainly now with the Ether price, I think I can also buy 4 or 5 Avados with the money I earned with Tornado Cash. But wow. I also have to say, maybe I'm an outlier because I started very early on where there were not a lot of people in that pool yet. That's always a thing. If you start early, it's the same thing with mining. If you, the earlier you start, the more lucrative it
totally.
Is. And now the some people complain in our group that they don't get enough transactions. It's also the case that you need to put some ETH into the wallet to pay for the gas. And some people say right now it's more lucrative to put maybe that ETH into some yield farming or something so that it might earn you more.
Yeah.
But like I say, if you just have some spare ETH lying around, that could be a very easy way to just create some passive income because you really don't have to look at it.
Yeah. And what about Tornado incentivizing it from their side? Because I know one mechanism that's super popular in DeFi is to do some liquidity mining. So to give some of the protocol governance tokens to people who do a specific service that helps the protocol, that helps the application. And so I see that Tornado Cash, it actually has a token, Torn token, it has a market cap of over 70 million, fully diluted valuation of 1 billion. So is there any plan for them to kind of incentivize people who run relayers in their native token? Or is there something that would kind of speak against doing that?
Yeah, to be honest, I don't know all the details of the way that they reward. So what I know for sure there is that the longer you leave your deposits into one of these pools, the more of these Torn tokens that you get, which is logical because they want to have a large amount of deposits in each of these pools because it helps with the anonymity. But I think there's also some form of compensation also for these relayers. But like I said, I cannot give you any specific details just because I don't know all the details there. But I'm sure that if you ask in our community channel, there will be plenty of people that have thought this out and can give you a good answer on that.
I'll look it up. Yeah, and maybe to finish, what is one of the other dApps that you quite like from the dApps that you offer right now with the Avado node or might add in the future? I know there's a lot of talk about decentralized file storage solutions like Filecoin or Arweave, which are specialized in, it's basically like decentralized Dropbox. Instead of like trusting Dropbox to store your images, you can put it on a distributed network. And it seems like this would also could be potentially a fit for Avado. Is that something that you look into?
Yeah, so in general, so some considerations. So what we said is that the opportunity to earn money with Avado lies in three things. So it's basically the CPU, which is on 24/7, which has an opportunity to do something for a protocol. Secondly, you have the disk space. And then thirdly, you have the bandwidth. And so any of the combinations that you need can yield you into some profits. So if you look at Mysterium, for example, it's the bandwidth that you're selling. You don't need any disk space for that because you're just like transferring data. If you look at things like Filecoin, like you're reselling your disk space, basically. And also we are part of your bandwidth because the data needs to be transferred, of course. Now, what we all have noticed, because we don't have a Filecoin package on Avado, because the requirements that Filecoin has is like huge. You really need like terabytes and terabytes of storage to earn any significant amount of tokens in their protocol, in their network. Mm-hmm. So that's, I think it's a little bit, I think the use case of something like Filecoin is not like super like interesting for Avado at this stage. So there might be other projects that pop up that have maybe less requirements with regards to that. Maybe one that I can mention, which is also an interesting story, is the story of Hopper, which is basically sort of a privacy communication protocol, as we can like send peer-to-peer messages fully encrypted and so forth. And then these Avado boxes also participate in that, in the sense that they also provide nodes for the Hopper network. Now, I think the interesting part, besides the software aspect for it, because there will also be incentivized, they're now still on a testnet, but they're rolling out their solution to the live net, so you will actually earn this Hopper token. So again, another source of passive income for Avado users. Mm-hmm. But the approach, and that is, I think, also an interesting concept to think about, towards projects. So if you look at, for example, the Hopper project, so they have a lot of people in their community that maybe have bought into the token at an early stage, but they are technically very unskilled. So but they still want to participate in INET protocol. So we talked to the people of Hopper, and so we decided together that they say, yeah, so on the one hand, and that's the case for, let's say, 99% of all blockchain projects, if you go to their website and you want to participate, the only option that they provide is that you can download their software. Mm-hmm. But there was like on your own, you have to start reading the documentation. You have to provide your own server infrastructure or build your own machine and just try it out and run it. And for a lot of people, that's not very obvious. So we said to them, you should have like a second option on your website, which is buy a device with the Hopper software pre-installed on it. So we went along with that idea. And so we built a custom version of the Avado, which is called the Hopper Box. And they actually sell it on their website. So we do basically all the provisioning. Mm-hmm. We do all the logistics, the RMA and so forth. So the support as well.
Yeah.
And they just have a second option to sell a device to their users. That's also been very successful. And it's a very interesting proposition because they can now activate a lot of their users in their community that really want to help out, but they're not technically savvy enough. And then again, this Avado solution or this customized Avado solution, then again, lowers the threshold for people to participate in their network. So it's beneficial for Avado, but it's also very beneficial for the project itself.
Cool. Yeah, you got me interested. Very last question, because I know you have a hard stop, but Hopper, like how does it actually work? Because it says it's a protocol for data privacy and metadata. So it's, can I imagine it as like a data transfer protocol? You know, then potentially something like WhatsApp could use this instead of the internet to transfer messages between users, or what sort of end user applications could use this?
Yeah, so I think the Hopper as such is really the protocol layer. So, and they solve that problem of having like a fully anonymized and fully encrypted peer-to-peer communication. So there certainly is a decentralized WhatsApp, I think, is really on the cards there. Mm. It's difficult for me to do the whole pitch for Hopper. So maybe you should ask it themselves. I think they can also tell a very compelling story about their product as well. Like I say, we are merely the provider of the hardware and the infrastructure layer for Hopper. And like just a couple of days ago, we also launched a campaign where people that actually own a Hopper device can also claim some Hopper tokens themselves. So it's also eligible for Avado users. So
yeah,
that's
I saw
also
that.
Tied to the minting of the NFT. So
I was very happy about that.
The day before.
Yeah, totally cool. Well, thank you so much for your time, Stefan. This was incredibly interesting. I was bullish on the blockchain computers before this podcast, but I'm even more bullish now, and I can't wait to see what you guys ship next. I really want to encourage more people to buy these sort of devices, because it's of tremendous help if you want to participate in these crypto networks.
Those are very nice words.
Yeah. Talk soon.
Thanks for the invitation. It was a pleasure to be here.
Hey, it's me again. I hope you liked this episode. If you did, please feel free to share it with your friends and family, or give us a follow on Twitter or LinkedIn. And if you have some feedback, reach out to me. I'd love to hear it.